we need to bring corporate knowledge to Dave Morris as an excellent resource to assist with that. And I think it's also important that one exposes the up-and-coming generations to processes like today, and I think I'm very grateful to have Morris here with me. I'm not sure, Honourable Chairperson, if you would like the light dim or if the presentation is clear. I'll be guided by you. I'm ready to begin if you are.
I will check with those that I'm actually so that you can do properly the right one that's been mama. Are you comfortable with the one of the
okay.
It's only my trying to go over the problem here.
Following time frames. was then realized that the MOU was simply too gentlemanly, and we needed a more robust type of contract, and a service level agreement was developed. It's essentially the same thing, it's just much, much more detailed, and as I take you through it, you'll understand, it's almost contractually in the way it's set up. So we have today service delivery standards, and we have today service level agreements. The service delivery standards are attached to a service delivery, to a service level agreement, and basically they entrench the delivery of accommodation services for specific clients. They're time bound, they're performance bound, and they're business process bound. What happens today in discussion with our clients, we find that the client has become quite tight. They don't want to just use the standard service level agreement. Military veterans, for instance, brought their legal services and they wanted to tighten up on the conditions. So clearly the clients are trying to get public works very much more aware of the obligations they have in providing the service. So some of the clients are asking for tailored types of service level agreements. What is the purpose of the SLA? Just to take you through, basically it's to govern the relationship between public works and the unit department or entity, and it's about how we deliver the entire life cycle of services, planning, acquisition, maintenance, and disposal. It provides the basis to ensure ongoing service delivery to the acceptable standard, as will be concretized in the service delivery standard. And the duration of any service level agreement is normally 3 years from the date it's first signed, and then at the end of 3 years, there will be a review. We, starting next year, the first of the review of the SLA, but it's very much triggered as to are both departments that have contracted the service level agreement happy with this the way it is? Is there some learning? Do they want to change certain things? So we'll be moving forward basically on an individual basis to see whether we have to do that. In terms of the structure of the service level agreement, the first part deals with general conditions, items 1 to 4. There are definitions. Definitions will typically include YAMA, public work, the client department, SLA, service delivery standards, the kind of acronyms that we would use in terms of our day-to-day business. The purpose again describes the reason for the SLA as well as the SDA. The parties section in the agreement talks to parties concluding the agreement, and the duration again is the applicable time period. So you can see just from the first 4 points that the document is already starting to be very contractual in nature. Items 5 to 9 deal with the responsibilities of the user department. First of all, there's an immovable asset requirement and the need for the user department to respond to the armor, comply with it, and ensure the development of user asset management plans. As I will talk to you a little later, you will appreciate that the user asset management plan is the forward planning tool that we require so that public works can prepare itself to deliver to the client's requirements. The second element is the financial responsibility of the user department. And it talks about their funding, but it also talks to their obligation to pay public works back for services rendered. The role of the accounting officer of the client department, this talks typically to signing off needs assessments, where basically that triggers the project, and other obligations as well. It also touches to what the user has to do when they're a tenant in a state-owned building or when they're a tenant in a leased building. So it's typically at the state, if you're in a state-owned building, you will occupy it in the following way and do the following thing. Items 10 to 12 then switch over to the responsibilities of public work. In general, there's a section that defines the general custodial responsibility of public works as a provider of accommodation. It goes again into the financial and service delivery standards. This specific section indicates that public works will pay for certain services and recover them from client departments through the billing process that has been put in place since 2005-06. Service delivery standards, it then talks and says that public works will adhere to the service delivery standards that has been agreed to with the client department in respect of providing the accommodation. Items 13 to 16, then the closing part of the service level agreement. It issue which is very important to us, and it's the breach and dispute prevention clause. As I indicated, because this is not a true legal agreement as would be private parties contracting, you will understand that when there are issues, it's left at the level of counsel's officer and minister's level to assist smoothen the issue. But specifically, this clause contains, or rather defines the modalities to resolve the agreement, and specifically says that if there are disputes or where the two departments don't agree, it will be resolved or referred to accounting officers for resolution and elevated to ministerial level. So this is really the only yardstick we have to sort things out because of the nature of one government department contracting with another. General is the general section, including matters of general applicability, and the addresses is where the domicilium would be for the signing parties. It contains the names of the signing parties as well as the date when the contract was signed. So specifically, this is the context of what the SLA looks like today. It's much more evolved than an MOU, and as indicated, we would be willing to make these available for you to peruse in greater detail. The status quo, and I think this is an important slide because it indicates where we are. If we start at the extreme right-hand column, that was the status on, as we discussed in our annual report in 2011 and 12. We had 41 users at that point. 22 SLAs were signed, 14 were not, and 5 were not required. I'll deal with that in a moment. It's not essentially a big issue. But if you say that 22 were signed out of the total, it gives you a figure of 61%. The picture has gone down. If you look at the second column from the right, we're currently sitting at 50%. So technically speaking, it seems as if we've regressed. But if you look at the top, the client base has increased from 41 to 51. So in the last year, there's been a significant increase of client departments that have come to us. And typically, these are more the entities. And entities, members will appreciate, would have in most instances had the option to go it alone and provide their own services. But many of them find a challenge in doing so and their readiness, and then they revert to us and say, would we please assist them with accommodation provisioning services? We have as well a list of who all these departments and entities are, and this can equally be made available to you. The issue of SLA is not required. There's the department, you'll see the figure 1, as far as I know, that's international relations, and then there's 4 entities. This is us as officials saying, with the extent of work we do with these 5 entities, the work is not that much. Foreign Affairs specifically, everything is outsourced to them. They use us from time to time for a small property matter. We obviously provide the prestige accommodation, and we will prioritize the development of an SLA around that small bouquet of services that we offer in international relations. With regards to the other 4 entities where we say SLA is not required, it's because, for instance, they are contracted through their parent department. So the entity that reports to a specific government department, in the SLA with that government department, we then encapsulate all the entities. It's very much the working relationship in each specific instance. As I indicated, notwithstanding the challenges that are faced, we are approached by a new departmental client to offer them a service. And specifically from the 1st of April, we would like to indicate that the Department of Economic Development has started making discussions with us. They are currently housed in the DTI head office, but DTI is expanding, and this department may soon require its own accommodation. And we've received the initial telephone calls to say, do we have to work through public works or can we go it alone? So we're at that level of engagement of helping them understand what their role is and what our role is. The other 2 departments that are listed, Monitoring and Evaluation and the National Planning Commission, they're currently housed in the union buildings with the presidency because they're an extension of the presidency. But the accommodation in the presidency at the union building is becoming very tight, and we explore exploring accommodating them in a building that we're refurbishing known as AgriBar, and there are discussions fairly far advanced. We're waiting for their lease assessment. We have the AgriBar building that's under redevelopment. It's an old asset that we're improving, and both departments have indicated their interest. In fact, they're fairly adamant that they would like to be in that building if the sizing is correct for them. The Companies Tribunal is an entity of the DTI. They have the Competitions Tribunal that is doing it alone, but the Companies Tribunal has indicated that they would like us to render their services. Presently, they're a small entity in DTI, and their accommodation is a leased building in Pretoria for this stage. And we're currently embarking on a process to find them. The Special Investigation Unit models will assist, but we have not previously serviced them, but the SIU now is apparently asking us to assist them. I then had a meeting with the CCMA in Johannesburg at their request. The CCMA do their own thing, but they're sitting with about 150 leases that they're struggling to manage. And it's very interesting, in some of these instances, it's leases that they're finding themselves involved with, they're getting into troubles with the leases. And they're seeing public works because they're hearing of the turnaround initiative with the leases that members will be aware of. They're seeing this as potentially a way of helping them with that. But it was an initial discussion only. They were then going to revert and request in writing based on if they decided to work with us or not. At this stage then, for those six, we're saying that possible relationships and eventual SLAs will come based on agreements that will be reached in the future. I think a few observations on SLA compliance. The current level of 50% is clearly low and is concerning to us. I think that I understand from colleagues that have been in the key account management business longer than the year I've been there, that it was in part public works was probably not championing and following this initiative up. We had heard through the Zinicella that we need the service delivery standard, we need to lock ourselves and our clients into an agreement, but depending on who was at the helm of public works at the time from the top, this may not have been something that was on the radar. What we can say is definitely from the 1st of January this year, there's a very aggressive engagement with client departments. I think members are aware of our acting duties. There's a very concerted effort to be customer-centric and client-centric. There's a series of DG meetings that the DG is currently running, and we assist her with that. We assist with the agenda. That is at the DG level. Then at my level, when I meet with the acting or permanent DGs in client departments, we engage our level. At Morris's level, as acting chief director, and then at the key account management level specifically. So right the way through, there's a very much more aggressive program to have bilateral meetings stick to the meeting schedules that have been put in the SLA document. What we've noticed is where the SLAs have been signed, however, as a model of that not all the clauses and conditions of the SLAs are being adhered to. And I think the responsibility lies for us as officials to take the SLA and make sure that both within public works as well as within the client, what is contained in the SLA, the obligations and the duties and responsibilities, are understood not only at the DG level and my level and Morris's level, but right down to the function leads, that they understand that these services are serious and we need to stick to those timelines. So moving forward, as part of this aggressive thing that's been happening since January, is to raise the awareness of the fact that we do have an SLA, and it's supposed to be a performance-minded document that we all need to adhere to. What are the effects of non-compliance? I think a couple of slides on how we see the effects of their not complying either with a signed SLA or even not having signed the SLA. And we think, first of all, that compliance with the government is undermined. The lack of commitment and sense of urgency amongst those departments that have not concluded SLAs with the agreement. If the client is not that interested in signing an SLA, they won't be as aggressive in completing the new apps. They won't feel that thing. assist us as officials trying to interpret from our first-hand knowledge as to why are the others not coming to the party. A second issue is the effect of not finding the SLA, as I've indicated, is the non-compliance to the user access management plan. This, as members will know, is to allow public works to have sufficient forward planning for the requirements that the client has told us for the next 3 or 4 years they're going to need ABC. Now, if they don't find the SLA, again, they're not reminded of the fact that the user asset management plan is such an important guiding document. And it does put public works a little bit on the back foot in terms of readiness to deliver both competency and resources. Let us talk a little bit about the financial implications of non-compliance. As members will be aware, in 2005 there was a devolution of infrastructure budget, and as concretized in the SLAs, user departments are expected to reimburse DPW within 30 days for various services rendered, whether it's for new acquisitions, accommodation charges, new or existing leases, tenant installations, security measures, municipal services. You'll see brackets on the slide per SLA item, so per SLA. In the financial aspect of the SLA, it says you would pay public works back within 30 days. And it's referred to in each of those specific clauses. Now, clearly, it's not entirely the client's fault that they're not paying us, because the billing dilemma, as members may be aware, is partly the fault of public works through the non-existence of the itemized billing system and the inaccurate information on the system. So when the customer billing division draws the information and puts it in an invoice and it goes through to the client is not always in agreement with that invoice, just as I would not be in agreement with an Edgar invoice if I didn't buy the jacket. So there's a process of dialogue to clean up that. I think this is a concerning picture, and I apologize, there's a mistake on the total, the third column at the top, total 11-12. But my picture... Public Works has spent money it doesn't have to provide these services, and it's therefore sitting with a big hole in the bank balance on the suspended fund until that is cleared by the client department, and therein lies the dilemma. Our colleagues at Customer Billing have prepared a debtors analysis, and you will notice that we're sitting currently at 3 billion rand if you look at the total at the bottom on the right hand side. The narrative is that, against the looking at the total, the 1.1 billion comes from the previous year, and the 2.001 billion is the current picture as it stands. So the heading at the top there is not supposed to be 11-12, it should be 12-13. That's the mistake that I would like to apologize for. I picked it up on the phone this morning. So we're currently sitting at the end of quarter two with 1.5 months into quarter three, and the bank balance looks 2 billion rand in the red. If you look at the age analysis, you will see that invoices unpaid older than 90 days is 372. I'm slowly moving from the right to the left on the total. Invoices that are 60 days are sitting at 412 million, and 30 days is 276. And the current invoices are 9, or the current that will be issued is 938. And the horizontal. Yes. Except, obviously, when you get to the 2 and the 1 and the 3, those are billions. So clearly, we have to do something about this before the end of the financial year. If we don't, it was another huge audit matter. And you'll see the breakdown, accommodation, private, municipal, cases, the capital works that we do, and the recoverables is where they have asked us to do, when clients have asked us to do work with funds that they had, and then we recover it from them. I think just to articulate what I've described in the previous picture, we have currently a debtor balance of 3.5 is at this time of the year, key account management together with customer billing starts to have at the level of official very aggressive bilaterals with the default clients, where we basically on a weekly basis, depending on which key account is meeting which client, it's an ongoing thing now from now until the end of January. The trend in the past has been that the payment is low and it spikes in the fourth quarter. As the clients themselves start realizing that they've got surplus or they need to do something and pay, because they're starting to be audited now. So quickly in the fourth quarter they start paying us back. We can certainly make a subsequent presentation with which department is owing watchmen, and that might be useful so that honourable members can see the breakdown as to where the default really lies. In terms of the way forward, members will be aware of the turnaround strategy that has been conceptualised and which management is currently prioritising in order to address the inadequate service delivery. I've emphasised that we've adopted a client-centric model and that the client approach, in other words, we exist as public works to service our clients, is a fundamental pillar of the turnaround. Part of the turnaround model is to dedicate the resources on a key account basis across the value chain. I'm pleased to advise that the insourcing plan, which has been driven through the Office of the COO and the DDG project, is well advanced. I'm told that Treasury has made funds available for insourcing the resources that are required, and the plan that was presented to our expo last week indicates that towards the end of November, early December, the required resources will be brought in. At this stage, it's focusing on the 6 big clients, SAT, Defence, Justice, Correctional Services, as well as Parliament and the President. Yes, I wish I could have put the other presentation. Effectively, what we have is we have a key account management branch, which is your front office that engages with the client. It's made up at the moment of 6 directorates. A client-centric model says that it doesn't help give the level of service if one director, key account manager, is looking after 11 clients. And if each one of them have a big client like SAPS or Defence, that takes up 99% of the time, and you're not able to give the rest of the clients in your portfolio a good service. So the client-centric model effectively means one key account management team per client. But it's a process to get there because it's going to be a big increase in the personnel and the resources. If we have 52 user departments and entities, excluding Parliament, excluding Presidency, excluding the executives, 53 is a big number for 6 directors. For 6 directors to look after. So what is being prioritized is to say, who are the clients that make up 80% of public works' budget? There's 10 of them. SAPS, Justice, Water Affairs, Home Affairs. We define who those are. And as part of the first round of the client-centric model, my understanding is that the big 6 or the important 6 are being facilitated. Client-centric means your front office is dedicated, but your back office is dedicated. So what happens at the moment, whether the project management division, whether the leasing division in the regional offices, those colleagues in those operational areas are servicing any one of the 53 clients. So there's a submission on their table, I'm doing a lease for SAPS. Oh yeah, there's another submission, I'm doing a lease for Justice. Oops, I've got a crisis, municipal services for Home Affairs. That is part of what hasn't been helpful. So the client-centric means the entire team across the value chain will only be focusing on one client. And that way they get to know the client extremely well, they get to know how the client works, what the client requires, and you're also having a single point of accountability for that client within the organization. Now, the insourcing plan that is being driven, as I indicated, to bring the extra resources in for the first 6 is aiming at the front office and the back office being sufficiently facilitated to be able to deliver clients haven't submitted a user asset management plan. And we, chaired by the acting COO, there was recently a 10x10, and those being the big 10 clients that make up the 80% of the spend. And we've agreed that by the end of the fourth quarter, there has to be some movement on the UAMPS for the next year. And the issue is the challenges with the UAMPS. The YAMA is a very big program, and client departments are concerned about the resources that they don't have to implement the user asset management plan. And resources is human capital as well as financial resources. But what Public Works has done in the past, which it will continue to do on an annual basis, and I must say our new business plan includes these kind of initiatives we're discussing here, we will continue aggressively to train the users on the user asset management plan. These will be schedules so that the users understand how the user asset management plan process works. Through the engagement that is happening from the DG level at the DG to DG bilateral, as well as at my level, as well as Morris and the key account manager level, we're going to promote the need for client departments to sign an SLA and to see the good intention that's in that for them as well as for us. What we undertake to do is to, like today, report more regularly on how we are doing with the signature of the SLAs. We will be writing to clients, as has already happened this year, on a monthly basis, reminding us, but we'll be accelerating or elevating this to the level of accounting officer and the minister. I think within the key account management unit, we have found that perhaps we have kept too much of the problems with us. We need to elevate and get that support. And it's starting to happen, as I've indicated, at the DG to DG bilateral. It's very important. The DG calls, for instance, for an agenda of items that are our issues, and therein we rest. Example, SLA not signed yet. And that becomes a discussion item at the DG to DG bilateral. The Public Works, rather, is in the process of acquiring a billing system. There was a tender process. I think that what has happened now is, as a result of the leasing team that's been brought in to help clear the leasing, there's a specific type of billing system that needs to be responsive to getting the accurate information of the leases. And my understanding is that the customer billing division has indicated that the acquisition of the billing system is being very well timed with the new leasing team that's been brought in, so that the billing system offers us what we want, which is correct, accurate information. Then the customers don't have to argue about the contents in that billing system. And as indicated earlier, key accounts together with customer billing is going to drive this issue of the balance of payments with a view to increase the level of collection of funds that's due from Public Works. That's due from clients to Public Works. Honourable Chairperson, I'll commend that at the end of my presentation. And assisted by Morris, if you find further details, we'll be able to take some questions.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Is there any addition?
So thanks for that. I think the speaker has covered comprehensively the issues that which we are addressing in the presentation. But I think there was a question that which you raised about the client-centric approach that we were talking about. And I think Peter is also trying to address that, but because currently we have a situation that the DSM already indicated that it depends as to who shouts the loudest among our clients' partners. And then I think with this kind of an approach, where you've got the key account manager for each client, as well as a set of professionals that will be assisting that key account manager in terms of delivering the service to that particular client. And I think I'm sure that we can achieve the efficiencies that we would want to achieve. And then we'll be able to comply to the service delivery standards as agreed upon between ourselves and the client department.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's put Chairperson in the center of this
chairperson is this on page 11. The statement is the possible relationships are in discussion and the signing of FLA with Uganda must be made. Chairperson, this one doesn't tell us the time frame. Because they must keep us the time frame, because if they told us, if they tell us that the signing of this agreement will depend on agreement petition. That's on the open paper. But they do not understand when the group is decided. Because it can be done in 2018, 2014, or 2015. And then the last one, Chair, is this one on page 30. The second sentence check, the lack of commitment and sense of interest among those in the department and that are not completed. What I want to understand, President, what are the reasons of this? It's a person that are not committed, there is no sense of commitment. Why, what should it? And what steps have been taken by the department to ensure that? All departments are committed. And the last one, Chair President, I think this is a big issue.
Thank you very much, Chair President, and thank you very much for the presentation. Some of my questions actually were actually asked by Honorable Mahinda, but I will just focus on the one that I think you were asked. My first one is with regard to the issue of the mandate. Are you actually claiming your mandate as Department of Public Works so that you are in control of the mandate? That's my first question. And the second one is with regard to the issue of the previous level agreement signed. The third is for 3 years. And after 3 years, it will be reviewed. I just want to know as to whether after the 3 years, if the client department is not satisfied, are they actually obligated in fact to actually sign, even if they are not satisfied? The other one is with regard to the explanation that you actually gave us in terms of client-centric, where you actually said that you putting people in the front to help the clients, but you said the services will be rendered to client basis. So I just want to find out just whether you have enough improvement to be able to working on the department. My other one is with regard to the issue of compliance to the FLA, where you indicated that it is inadequate from both departments and entities and also from the client on page 12. So I just want to know why are they not actually complying, because if you actually have a contract, a contract needs to be actually, those who sign the contract must actually comply. So I just want to know if they are not complying, what step are you actually taking, because and the other one is with regard to the last one, with regard to the DUC, where you actually indicating that you were not actually dealing with the high terminal. So have you improved on that one so that the client department can be able to pay and see exactly where they are repaying? Thank you very much.
Some of my questions I was just concentrating on the two letters that were in my head. I think this is the reality, because you don't have the accurate information as far as Africa is concerned. And all that boils to the number. That was only implemented at national level. We've been around the provinces, and then we were told that even at local level, they don't even know whether the route to build, whether the it's a national asset or it's a provincial asset, even their own asset, they're not aware. To an extent that some of the local government officials, that's why it comes to push some of these assets. If they don't know, there's no clear indication of where they belong, they just start. That is a problem. It boils back to the Yama that was not properly implemented. And then, so that we, by now we would know the verification of all of those assets. My other question or comment is around the issue of the funds. There's nothing wrong with the allocation of budgets to funds by any various departments according to their needs. But the issue is for people to claim this mandate. Because in the end, we end up having the Department of Education, building schools, and all that and other things. And my question at the end of the day, if the school was built by whoever the education department decided to employ, at the end of the day, do we have that asset as part of the GDW? All the assets that have been, the new assets or the old assets, they need to be transferred to the register of public assets. To me, it's not clear as to if the school was built by some bank that was decided by the Department of Education. At the end of the day, to reclaim those assets that were built by other stakeholders. I think maybe that could be the transference of funds from the government. Maybe it could be debated at that level of at ministerial level, because at the end of the day we don't get what we want. That is so far, because the list of departments that have not signed, maybe we request it so that we could assist in a way, equal service instead of any assist to say, these are the, your department has not signed with our department. Yeah. Thank you.
My counsel? Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks for the proper support around this matter that has been raising a concern at the top of the committee. As the Chair, I would like to check. They have indicated the inadequate adherence by the department, including the Department of Public Works, where it is said. If they are the people that are pushing signing of service level agreement in the department, and then said they don't comply, what example are they setting to the other client departments and related entities? Because on page 12, they are also cut of failing to adhere to the terms and conditions. And also they have indicated that this thing requires awareness in all levels, even including lower levels. Who's going to deal with this thing? Because it's not good just to make a statement that there must be awareness at all levels, and you don't know who will be responsible for that, because the client department user entities as well as the department itself is failing to comply to the conditions that they have set themselves. What is the problem? Because they set it, they expect others to adhere to the results they are failing to adhere to. Can they unpack to us and say, what is the problem with the Department of Public Works
failing to adhere to the conditions that exist for the other departments, and also the those that is responsible for taking these awareness down to the lower level of the unit. The other issue on the observation side, they have indicated that their observation is that 50% is very low. By either department and entities, the view is very low. But now, if you set yourself a target to the margin, 50%, because it means that if you fail to adhere to the target, it means that you will be less than 50%, which is a worse off according to the performance. You know? Because when you do your target, even if you fail, but if you are above 50, it's something that is affected, but your own target is in the margin of 50. Is it going to assist the department if you put your service level agreement at that stage? And Chair, on the issue of the 2 billion that is being owed, and then also I want to check, because now they are continuing to sign the service level agreement, to say that usually if we are renting a building, you pay in advance. Have they considered that? Because even the auditor general, when we're asking a question, they say, how can we resolve this issue of the department failing to pay and so on? The issue of having the service level agreement also indicating, even on the memorandum of understanding, to say that when you sign this memorandum, the department will pay in advance, so that the department cannot be affected in its cash flow to pay for the client department and the entities that they are providing. We want to check whether they have considered that, because now this is an experience that they have been experiencing in the department. Lastly, Chair, we were told these 2 billion, my colleague asked the reason. Maybe we must get the reason, because when we're trying to ask questions, when they were presenting different departments that they were owing the department of different client departments that were owing the department, they told us that no, there was, as you have indicated, Peter, when you started, that there was no agreement. Is it because the reason is that people were not abided by anything, that's why maybe they are owing 2 billion, or you have identified them, there is a progress report to the report that you presented, that was presented before us before, around the issue of the client department owing to the Department of Public Works.
Thank you. Thank you. Are we done, Madam?
Thank you very much, honorable members. Morris will also step in and answer and assist with fielding some of the questions. In relation to the 3 billion that is outstanding, and Honourable Chair, if I may just ask, if I'm not avoiding any of the questions, there were many of them. If I haven't addressed the answer directly, please, I would be very willing to do so, perhaps just get a bit more guidance. But the question around this is that there's quite a lot of dialogue, or there has been, specifically towards the end of the last financial year, between the various key account management units and the client departments, to bring the deficit down as it was at that particular point. And we got to a particular point. I think there was, I wouldn't like to say that the figure was 500 million, but there was a substantial improvement in the balance of payments over the previous year. The 1.1 goes back to when this whole story started. So it would be from the end of March, like the year that ended, right through back to 2005. There's a specific breakdown that I've seen from the customer billing section that shows which departments did not pay this amount of 1.1 over all the years, and why historically there's been a problem. I think that the customer billing unit itself in Public Works has gone through quite a transition. They've capacitated themselves, they've improved on their business processes, and they have brought the deficit down to that for the past. With regards to the current amount of $2 billion, in terms of where we stand at the moment, I'm afraid I don't have the information today to say either better or worse than where we were at the same point in time last year. My view is that we have been championing the and that's where public works can division. We need to aggressively drive this with the site together with the customer billing. The issue for us is that this fund, these funds are not ring fenced in many instances. So the question is, if they're not paying public works, where is this money going? On what other programs is this being spent? There was a question on the billing system, and what I can indicate is that I'm aware that they went off to procure the system, and they are busy with the procurement process, which would ultimately go to the National Bid Committee, and then they would procure it. But I think at the point they are now is in acquiring the billing system, and just before they lock it in, the leasing company or the consortium that's coming in to do the turnaround on the leases might at this point be very useful to hear from them, so that the billing system is absolutely going to deliver on what is required. So there's a small window of opportunity that before we actually go and buy and pay for this thing, that if the leasing experts come in and they can say, aha, that's what you want, yes, it's fine, or no, in fact, it needs to have a bit more of this or less of that to work more effectively. And I think they're looking at dovetailing the two initiatives, because the one billing system needs to work in tandem with the leasing team that's coming in terms of the turnaround, because you'll notice that one of the big amounts outstanding is on the private leases on that document. With regards to the turnaround strategy and living the turnaround strategy, honourable members will know that in the first of the 7 years that the turnaround strategy is envisaged, the last, which comes to an end probably in this month, which is when honourable members started with us, the first year is the stabilisation, and there are 17 projects that talk to the stabilisation. In terms of where we are with the turnaround, what I would like to say is that the insourcing project is about to get to a point. As I've indicated, the presentation was made at Exco on Friday, it's in front of me here, and they're envisaging having these many, many resources that I think answer the other honourable member's question. They should be coming in from the end of the month. Part of the initiative was to get unspent funds turned around by Treasury to be made available to fund the turnaround strategy. That is my understanding as an Exco member. Second is the clean audit team. Again, from where I sit on the bid committee, I'm aware that the team of consultants that are being brought in, the tender has been evaluated, and as far as I know, it's very advanced in the final stages of bringing in the team to assist with the clean audit. And then, as mentioned, at the same point in the process is the procurement of the leasing team that's going to come in and assist cleaning. So I think in the 6 months, the initiatives are all now sitting in procurement. And if you recall, there's the terms of reference, you go out on tender, you evaluate the tender, and it's in the final stages of awarding the tender at the moment. With regards to the departments that don't need, I think I would like to just clarify, I think the honourable member is very correct. There are five, and it's wrong to say departments, it's one department that at this point, the only one I'm aware of is international relations. The other four are entities. So we apologize for we say a number of national departments. What we say a number of entities, including one national department and four entities, that would have been the more correct way of saying it. But it is the one department and the four entities. And I think subsequently to this presentation, if the honourable chairperson would require, we would certainly make available who those are. We would also make available the list of clients that have and haven't signed the SLAs. I have a copy of this, but we set it out nicely to present it. billing division makes available to key accounts management on a monthly basis the balance of payment situation. It talks to the current, the 30 days, the 60 days, the 90 days, and then it talks to the rest of the arrears that are owed. We had an initiative that we put in place last December where we said to our client departments, if you're not paying your invoices, and for instance your leases, and you need a new lease, we will not be able to go and get you a new lease until you've settled your account with us. So when we started to speak, and that's claiming the mandate issue, when we started to speak like that, then we found that because they don't want to be locked out or they have, you know, they don't want to be compromised in their service delivery, they started to understand our business. So it's a little bit like the private sector, you have to be a money collector. And if you have that tighter cuff from a cap, because cap is about being nice to the clients, but it's also about being firm in terms of saying if you want us to deliver the service, you also have to play the game with us. And I think the other honourable member indicated that we can't render the service if we don't have the funds to do that. So certainly, I believe that there has been an improvement, and this December January engagement will indicate as to how far the improvement has gone. And we certainly, as part of the information, will make available whether in fact there is a process. With regards to the timeframes for the new clients, we like to give timeframes. The thing is, the discussions are, for instance, the CCMA, the initial discussions were that they have 150 odd leases, they're having challenges, would we be able to take them on given our own plethora of issues that we're dealing with? If so, what would the terms and conditions be? So the discussions were still exploratory. It's not that they have written yet to say, thank you, Peter, for your information. We're willing to go with you. Can we now sign the agreement? I think in the case of Special Investigations Unit and the CCMA, the discussions are still about agreeing to whether they're coming with us. In the case of the company's tribunal, they have agreed. At the moment, it's one lease that's in Pretoria. We're currently busy procuring that lease. Our implementing agent is the Pretoria Regional Office. I think the effort at the moment has been towards getting that lease happening, and then we'll customize the SLA in tandem with that. It's about the level of service we'll provide them on that lease. So yes, in that regard, there is an SLA that is necessary, and I think the relevant key government will have to put it down to a time frame and make sure that it's in place. So that they have comfort that we're looking after them, and we have comfort that they also going to pay us back for the lease. Because when we meet with them, it's about both parties promising each other a lot of good deeds. But I agree with the honourable member, we need to concretize it down into an agreement, which is why the agreement is there in the first place. As far as economic development, monitoring and the national planning, they've always been government departments, they've just never needed us in the past. Economic development has started to find out what the rules of engagement are, but currently they're still in the DTI. So at the moment we don't service them because they're a sub-tenant of DTI and an extension, they made their own arrangement as to how they got there, and I certainly would have to find out how that happened. But monitoring and evaluation and National Planning Commission, to my understanding, are in the Union Building, not in Lex Morris with electricity. There's no other building. I think they're all in the Union Building, but it's jam-packed. So they've now started speaking to us about finding accommodation. And I think definitely they will have to have an SLA with us. Currently, though, from a presidency, my line in terms of public works is putting the bill completely. And that is something that will also be in discussion in the future. But still, even if we pay for their accommodation, there's still modalities of service delivery and response times and so on. The three-year review and whether they're obligated to sign, I think we will find out next year when the first of the services agreements come up for renewal as to we can even contemplate saying to them, will you rate our service over 3 years? Have we improved? What areas would you like us to improve on? On the other hand, we can also say to them, you know, in our 3 years, based on the agreement, we found that this and that hasn't worked or has worked. So we can tweak the agreement. I think there's no obligation on any of this to sign at the moment. It's something that we view as a good governance arrangement. And it's really imploring the clients to see the wisdom regards to the client centric and the sufficiency of employees, definitely not. I think that's a big problem at the moment, the capacity. Hence why the insourcing program that I referred to and the number of people that are going to be brought in and the funds that Treasury has made available. So yes, we can't reach the level of service required and attend to the client in the specific focused way with the current staff we have. There definitely needs to be a top-up, which is what the insourcing program is about. And it will be a significant number of staff that will come in. In terms of the 50% and whether that's a high or a low, I think, you know, we'd like to have had 5 service level agreements with all our clients. That would have been 100%. That would have been 51 service level agreements. That would have meant that both parties are on board, understand that there's a government arrangement, and do their best to speak to both sides of the agreement. So 50% for us is half that. We view that as low, as official. We'll strive aggressively to keep promoting this and the need for it, and hopefully that comes up. As to why they're not complying, I will certainly ask Morris to present his views, having worked in the key account portfolio for 10 or 11 years, and we will explain what his views are. I think the one slide indicated the skepticism of public work, the fact that it's not really an agreement that will end up in court if there's a defaulting type. You know, it's that kind of good governance document. I don't know if those are two. Perhaps Morris can discuss that. With regards to the billing in the schools, I think definitely the compilation of the asset register, where we then know on whose books the assets are, will really be the answer to the billing crisis for those assets like schools that we may be billed for, or where other departments are being billed for things that we should be billed. Currently, until that asset register, and there's been good progress, I must say, but until that asset register is locked in place, the key's thrown away, and we all know whatever who the assets belong to, I think the billing situation will have to be dealt with on that basis. Certainly, the billing that we involved with is billing our clients on the one hand for services rendered, but then we also pay for municipal services on behalf of the client. And that's possibly where the local authority issues come in that perhaps they're not issuing the correct invoice to the correct landlord. I'm not terribly knowledgeable on the extent of the problem, but I would be willing to hear more from the honourable member that perhaps I can address her question more accurately. As I've indicated, we will definitely be willing to provide the list of clients that have signed and the debtors and the non and who they are that is defaulting. As far as the awareness in both organisations, I think it is the key account management as the front office. It is our role to educate our clients as well as the organisation that is serving us in the back office on the SLS. We need to inform them on an ongoing basis that this is what we've agreed to. Be on your toes. We expect service in 10 hours or 3 days. We do that to the best of our ability. But again, it's this issue of the
take it down to the lower level, what you have said to them, because I don't think the Department of Public was calling the junior staff a workshop in them. You deal with the senior management, and then they take it down to the lower level, because they are saying you don't think that you'll be in a position to deal with it as Department of Public. Maybe it's a complication, you must change the approach.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. I raised the issue that we know we had to amend our performance agreement in terms of the clean audit initiative. And things like that that have come through, there's an initiative with the DBSA to improve on our service level agreement. And to have it entrenched in our performance contracts right now, it's almost so obvious that we should have thought about it. And I really thank you for that. It just sort of made my day to have it put through it since yesterday. And I think what we have done, and Morris will explain, I think it's key account management when these service level agreements are signed. They get scanned and sent to the regional offices, to the function groups that are working. And it is expected of them to roll it down. But if it flips the performance contract or work plan, that's where there's a chance that the thing is not adhered to. So sincere thanks for that.
Don't know when the general strategy will be to address.
performance place, adult performance place, that why there's this strategy, what is it that we have to track on? What is it that will track on each and every year that is on that first place? So that by the service of 14th year, then you can watch our grandchildren each year and also, you know, discuss their faith, but we won't be there again. Thanks, no, my understanding is that my mother is saying we must make that understand, make that step.
Short term.
Like now that we are doing, I want to know your priority right now. But the first priority, according to my understanding, is that we must deal with this corruption that is taking place. That's the first turnaround strategy. So we deal with it. That's why you're working sub-step.
At the moment, there is nothing because they are not the priority. According to the main
To provide for that, which is as a basic service to
is geared to address this fact. Currently, we are not really we are not at our best. No, we are actually at a point where we can say proudly that we are staying in the mandate of the department. But the general strategy, I think, is going towards the direction.
And
there was a question, I think it was the second question, in relation to how many clients were claimed on the UN and moving forward the schedule for that. We're currently populating that information for purposes of our APPs and the business plan. We would be able to provide that information accurately. The UN planning process started 3-4 years ago, and because there's been some change in staff, we're trying to go back to the records. But what we do know is that when the templates and the process after Kiama implementation was put in place, there was an aggressive training, and I think it was specifically to the main departments that needed to do user asset management plan because of the scale of their portfolio. But we can add that on as a list of information. That will be a very useful database together with the rest of the information, rather than mislead you with figures today that we don't have.
I remember, are there any
follow-ups?
Why are you? My follow-up is on the issue of the treasury funding department, why they don't have submitted the UN. The treasury is not aware about the procedures to be followed before the funding. That there should be UN that are supposed to be submitted by the UN before they fund them. Because you can't say, as a department, you can't provide, I would like to find them with accommodation if they've not submitted the user asset management plan. While Treasury on the other side is funding them without, then, you know, there's no alignment in what they're doing. Treasury is part of government department, the public government department, the treasury, what A is doing, B is supposed to know. What is the challenge? Then how are you going to deal with that situation?
A follow-up on that is, can I check also the department, because they have identified that challenge, have they met with the Department of Treasury just to take them through all the challenges they are having if the treasury is paying the department without adhering to the plan of UAMP.
Thank you. The first question is, the National Treasury is not aware. National Treasury is aware that there is a requirement that user department must submit to this UN. The National Treasury as a requirement, I mean, as in compliance with GIAMA. But I think I would like to admit as well from the department that this thing was not driven from the top to say that there should be engagement with National Treasury. But recently, there's been engagement that is driven by the Office of the CEO of the department. When National Treasury, I think it also answers the second question. When National Treasury was called in together with other departments, and then they were engaged on the issue of the significance of UM. And then also the assistance which is required in terms of making sure that we make user departments to comply with UM in terms of submitting the UM to National Treasury for funding purposes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah.
I've got another problem, question, but this one is with regard to the problem of municipal service delivery in complaints. It is indicated that it was done from 2009 to 2007, but it shows that there were still some satisfaction. at your land from the program so that we can improve the land, because it seems we still have some problems.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That question goes right to the heart. The Azimi Teleservice Building Improvement Program diagnosed all areas of public works and service delivery. As far as I recall, consultants were brought in, and there were four specific areas: it was lease management, property management, construction, delivery of construction, and the fourth one was customer relationship management. Now, at a particular point in 2007, the project came to an end, and the deliverables were placed with the regional office. I don't think there was a post-implementation review after that. But what I can tell you is that the department is currently conceptualizing, in order for compliance purposes as well, a new service delivery improvement program, which we're required to do on an annual basis, as a FOSAS deliverable, and certainly in terms of the DPSA requirements. And we are drawing from the corporate knowledge of staff that may still be around to bring that forward and inform the new service delivery program that has to run on an annual basis now per MTF cycle. So in terms of the lessons learned, I certainly was not, Honourable Chair, wasn't directly involved with that initiative. My sense is that many of the staff that worked have left the department. Hence, in conceptualizing the new SDIP that we need to do, we try to go back to corporate knowledge to get that to inform us. It's not a satisfactory answer in saying there was a project, it stopped, we analyzed it, we can therefore improve in future based on the lessons learned. We are trying to find, but our understanding was that it closed, and the responsibility for the rollout of the improved services were then given to our regional offices. I think in terms of meeting the new SDIP requirements, we will try and attend to those questions. And there's some pressure for us to put the new SDIP in place.
Thank you very much. I wonder that, are there any questions from the Marila?
Certainly, if you have
you, Chair. Chair, my question was
the signing of memorandum, but it has never come to place.
The signing of the FFA, is that what?
MOU.
On A. Chairperson, we signed the SLA with user department, and then I'm not sure which one would sign, because we already signed with user department that which they come back to.
I didn't get to correct on page 12.
Okay.
On your document, you say they inadequate appearance for user department entities as well as EPW.
I hear it's about adherence to the terms and conditions of SLA. I think Peter has actually tried to highlight that part when he was answering some of the questions. Basically, I think the issue of capacity, and we are now talking to the issue of the client-centric approach. Because we try to make sure that at least the service delivers that. Because the clients, they don't want just to sign, but they want to look at whether the service delivery standard and the time frames at which we put on the service delivery standard are we capable of meeting those time frames. Now, with the capacity that which we have, which is kind of a mix in terms of what has to be achieved, then it becomes a problem. And then, therefore, we cannot say that we are adhering or complying to the terms and conditions of the service. Up until those capacities is kind of built, and we have this client-centric approach, and then we'll be in a position to say that also we are complying in terms of making the delivery standard from our side.
Thank you very much. In the absence of follow-ups, I would like to summarize my team. Of departments that are paying based on the last information that we received from you that you were departments that were not paying to show us the progress of how far are you attached to or addition to that template. There should be an example of a letter or a communication between you and the client department that are owing, say you do make a follow-up with them, say they need to catch up with their debt. Because if you are just saying they are not paying and there's no follow-up communication with them, say, wake up, square up their debt to me and I don't say anything. There should be a proof that you have been doing that. And a proof should be based on 4 or 5 departments. And a proof should be based on the months or the time that we reminded, so that we can also be satisfied that something is being done to remind the department. And a proof of you reminding Parliament of squaring up or paying up should be there, because we are in the buildings that are not paid for. That's my understanding. On that note, thank you very much for your presentation, and thank you very much for waking up at 4 and not sleeping in the hotel. And thank you very much that you are going back to go and work until 8-9. That's what I heard, that you knock up at around 8-9. Thank you for that. And as I said earlier on, the big men up there will one day reinvest you on your looking off link and making sure that things are taking place correctly and not in the country. Thank you very much. Go back to the table. Honourable members, next week there's no meeting, the Protocol Committee meeting. There's a briefing to members of Parliament on the 2011 self-cut outcome by the Minister and the President's National Planning Committee. So,
you.